WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. You're on the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. And joining us on the Commons today is a very different and unique person. He is the Honorable Mayor Steve Berman, Mayor of Gilbert, Arizona. Steve, thank you so much for joining us. I know you're at work right now.
Well, that's okay, Shu. Thanks for letting me talk.
You have really got a lot of followers in Arizona. Now, Gilbert is a growing town.
We're the fastest-growing city in the United States with a population over 100,000. We've been recognized that a couple of times, so we're the fastest.
You are the fastest. Wow, I thought Las Vegas had those honors.
No, Las Vegas is behind us in terms of percentage, percentage of growth. We beat Las Vegas. Las Vegas is actually there, I think, third or fourth.
Wow.
Irvine, California, I think, is number two. But Las Vegas, it's certainly growing fast, but it's for cities over 100,000, Gilbert was ranked number one in the United States for growth.
Well, I used to live in Arizona back in the 70s, late 70s. I left in 1980, and Gilbert looked like it had just stepped out of a Western. I mean, it was starting to grow, unfortunately. It was starting to lose its particular flavor that it had, but it always looked like it had just stepped out of a Western movie.
Not stepped very far either, huh?
No, it was wonderful. I mean, it always really made me feel great. And then it started growing and becoming like any other suburban area in the country, which is sad.
But see, when I moved to Gilbert in 1981, there was only one traffic light in town, and it was...
I remember it.
And another true story, in 1989, I was elected Mayor Gilbert for the first time, and I witnessed an incident at a local convenience market on a Saturday night, and I called the police station and said, "This is the mayor. You need to get a car down here as soon as possible." And the answer from dispatcher was, "I'm sorry, Mayor, but both cars are already out on calls."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So even being the mayor didn't pull any clout, huh?
Well, when you only got two cop cars, we were that little. But now we're 155,000 people, and it's an incredible community. In fact, recently the Tribune newspapers did a survey, and apparently Gilbert has got the second lowest amount of poverty of any city in the United States with a population over 100,000. So we're a good-sized city, we're a fast-growing city, and we have very little poverty.
Well, that's good. I mean, but one of the issues, I mean, I'm glad that you have little poverty, because it's a really beautiful, beautiful area. I mean, my heart never left Arizona. Physically, I moved to the East Coast, but my heart never left Arizona. It's still right there. In fact, I used to live in Mesa, right off of Gilbert Road.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just up the road from Gilbert, and I used to go through Gilbert all the time because my husband was stationed at Williams Air Force Base. So I used to shoot down Gilbert Road to get to the...
Great.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm familiar with the way it used to be. But back in those days, Steve, I did not know of a thing called a homeowners association. That's something that's something that's very new. And Gilbert has certainly had its fair share of ink in terms of problems with associations. And I also believe that Gilbert is one of the few, or one of the many places, I shouldn't say few places, one of the many places in the country that mandates associations.
Well, we mandate association depending on the on what kind of subdivision is being put in. If you're coming to Gilbert and you want to put in a... Gilbert, at one time, was almost all one-acre home sites.
Mm-hmm, I remember.
And back in those days, there was no requirement for homeowner association because there was no common property to be owned. But now as Gilbert grows, and as the developers want to higher and higher density, we make them put in common areas. And if there's a common area, there is a requirement for somebody to maintain the common area, and hence the need for homeowners association.
Okay, so basically, if I understand what you're saying, is it's basically the developers who want to increase density, thus, I guess, maximizing their profits, obviously.
Yes.
That's sort of at the root of all of this, huh?
Well, yeah, see, there's some land in Gilbert that was recently sold for a hospital, and it was not zoned at all, and it's actually in a county island, and the land sold for $280,000 for an acre of land.
Wow.
Now, if the land cost is $280,000, now this is before you zone it or put a house on it, what kind of houses can you put on there? And so you sure can't put one on there. I mean, not very easily, you know, unless it's a very expensive home. And so in order to buy land at that kind of money and somehow make a house that you can afford, people are putting 5, 6, 7 houses on an acre, and that's how it works. But if there is a common area, then we mandate a homeowners association.
Now, you and I talked a while back, and you probably are the only person who's given me an argument that makes sense in terms of why you'd want an association. And this is a very interesting fact: $280,000 per acre. And so the developer obviously is going to want to maximize his profits and make as much as he possibly can.
Well, just make it affordable for a person. I mean, if the land is $280,000, what's it? I mean, if you put a tent on the property, you know, you're looking at $280,000. I mean, if
$250,000 in excess.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a tent and no running water, and you're still looking at $280,000 house, which is for an awful lot of people, that's beyond their means. And of course, you're now going to put a tent. You are going to want running water. You are going to want toilets, and all these things crank up, you know, push that thing over the 280 level.
Let me ask you something, Steve. How much of the costs of the land are attributable to sort of this measure that seems to be sweeping the country called slow growth? Are there any laws that kind of require you to maximize the land, or is there any kind of a measure going on in Arizona right now regarding land conservation?
Well, yeah, there are, but the trouble, Arizona is a very conservative state, and we've got some legislators who are very, very conservative, and one of the primary drivers behind everything we do or don't do in our state is, and it sounds like it should be for everybody, but they pay a great deal of attention to our constitutional rights, and private property rights is one of the reasons we fought the Revolutionary War. And so a lot of these slow growth initiatives have a tendency to impede people's private property rights. And that's something that the legislature and it is true. I mean, Shu, if you had, what happens, and this is not a joke, it's a real example. You get a farmer who has a 40-acre parcel of land around an urban area, and if the farmer tries to plow his land to plant crops, he creates dust, and the neighbors complain vociferously. If he tries to use a crop duster to keep down the insects, the neighbors go absolutely bananas that they're spraying poison that's going to drift into swimming pools. And then the state passed a law a few years ago called the Grand Water Management Act that regulates how much water the man can get. So you got some poor old farmer with 40 acres of land, he can't farm it. And it's just, you can't farm it. And so you have so these are thinking, what am I going to do with my land? I can't farm it. Then you have someone walk up, say, we'd like to put an apartment complex on your land, and we're going to give you $250,000 per acre for it, which is $10 million. And the farmer says, woo-woo. I can either go, a bunch of patio-type homes, which would require homeowners association with common areas. And the farmer's thinking, wow, I can't farm land anyway. This way, $10 million, my family will never have to work again for generations. It'll solve all my problems. And so to try to stop this man from selling the land to the developer, it really interferes with his private property rights, and building houses is not an illegal use of land. And so the land gets sold, and then the new owner of the land says, what do you mean I can't build houses on my land? And so slow growth sounds better than it is. I mean, you can do it, but it only at the risk of other people's private property rights, because you have a right to, I mean, this is America, and you do have a right to do with your own land just about what you want, as long as it's not illegal.
Oh, no, I absolutely agree with you, and I'm not a proponent of slow growth. I think it's an oxymoron, and I think that we're overlooking a lot of a lot of other possibilities because we're trying to retard the growth. I don't have a problem with that. I think that we need to start going beyond some of the borders. We have the technology. I think there are a lot of things that we could be doing that we really are not doing. And with a lot of areas, I mean, Loudoun County in Northern Virginia has some pretty stringent rules and regulations in terms of where you can and cannot build and what you can and cannot do. And, you know, prices are very, very expensive. I think it artificially inflates the land, the price, the cost of the land.
You're right. I think you're probably right.
And, I mean, look at Portland, Oregon. They have one of the most stringent laws in the country. They have these belts, and you cannot build beyond that belt, which means that they're really, really increasing density within a smaller geographic area because they want to slow down growth. They're not doing that. They're not slowing down the growth. We've got people coming into the country. You know, we've got people growing up and leaving home and wanting to buy. So growth is going to happen. You can't stop it. You can't slow it.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's something called a taking. And my town got to buy 10 acres of land that we didn't really want to buy because the owner of the land brought it in multiple times for zoning, and we kept turning down the zoning. And the last time we turned it down, they came back and said, you think you know? You're so convinced what the land ought to be done with. You're welcome to do it. But it'll become your land, and we had to buy it. I mean, they sued us. It's called a taking. The city of Scottsdale, which is a city not too far from us, did the same thing. They basically said they weren't going to allow anybody to build houses in this big preserve area that belonged to somebody else. And city of Scottsdale. I mean, the good news was they were right. They absolutely got to decide that nobody could build on it. The bad news is the taxpayers got to buy all that land. And so cities have got a certain amount of zoning authority, but it's not unlimited. And you can't, because it's called a taking, you really can't take the value of somebody's land away from them. I mean, like your own personal home. If we were to tell you that you couldn't put a driveway on your house, or you couldn't have a front yard, or you couldn't plant grass, or you couldn't go in your backyard, we'd be taking away the value of the land from you, and the government can only do that if they pay you for it. So a lot of these slow growth initiatives, they sound good, and they get people all fired up, and there are developers who absolutely abuse the process. But it's as our attorneys love to say, it's a slippery slope when you start fulfilling people's property rights, because the city can get, they get sued. And we'll lose on a regular basis.
I'm not an attorney, and but I've always sort of questioned whether by forcing, by mandating associations where the individual property rights have been the bundle of rights that you get traditionally when you buy property in a traditional way, unencumbered, uncontrolled property. You know, you have certain rights. For instance, you have the right to decide what shade of white your mini blinds are going to be. You know, I mean, that's a property right. But all of these rights are being taken away before you ever get the property.
Well, shoot, you're exactly right. Gilbert was one of the first. One of the things we tried to do once we realized that you can't stop growth. The idea is how do you shape growth? And even before land got so expensive, and you can still buy land in Gilbert for 100,000 acre, 120,000 acre. But even when land was cheaper, even when it was 50 or 60,000 acre, there were still people that wanted to put five or six houses on an acre land.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Gilbert did back then is say, if you're going to go more than one house per acre, you've got to give something back to the community. Because back in the old days at Gilbert, where people had like one and a half acre lots, the town didn't even require that the roads be paved. The people were on septic tanks. They did not require paved roads. They just had, you know, literally dirt roads in front of their homes. But there were no common areas, so it didn't matter. Now, when they started putting more houses on an acre, the town started requiring green belts, open spaces. In Arizona, it rarely rains, but when it does, it floods.
Yeah, I remember that. But and then so, it would start, then it would just evaporate. You could sit there and watch it evaporate.
Yes, it will. But in the meantime, you keep sitting in a house full of water. So one of the things that's required in Arizona is that your house, your yard has to hold 24 hours worth of rainwater. Because we have virtually no storm drains in Arizona here, just very, very few. There, it's not like on the East Coast where they're all over the place here. There just aren't any. And so what we started requiring of these on these higher, I mean, on these higher density subdivisions, you have in green belts, you have water retention basins, that you have play areas. And as we required these things, it made the town very attractive. It created beautiful places for people to live. But the question was, who's going to maintain this? And at one time, and the problem beyond that is that different communities go to different lengths as to what they want, what the developers put in. For some, it's relatively spartan. For some, it may be just a 1 or 2 acre open field with a swing set on it for the kids to play baseball on. In other of our subdivisions, we have elaborate man-made lakes with waterfalls and they're stocked with fish and incredibly lush landscaping. And so for the town to pay to maintain and to maintain the common areas throughout the town, you've got some neighborhoods where they literally have dirt roads, which require no maintenance, and you've got other neighborhoods where they have, you know, elaborate water features, and it isn't fair that everybody's paying the same. And so we've assigned the responsibility to pay for maintenance to each neighborhood. So the question, how do you make, what mechanism has a neighborhood pay for their own neighborhood? And we tried something called a landscape maintenance improvement district when I was mayor 10 years ago, and it blew up on us.
Why is that?
Well, literally everything, it was human error, but every single mistake. The idea was that within a subdivision, every home would be assessed a fee, and then the town of Gilbert would do the maintenance, and the fee would be collected by Maricopa County. And they would then feed it to the town of Gilbert, and we would pay to maintain. Well, what happened was, I mean, literally, like I said, everything that could go wrong did go wrong. First of all, the town of Gilbert was sloppy and did not hire a good landscape contractor. And so all the trees and bushes and everything died.
Oh.
And the people were unhappy about that. But they became even more unhappy when it turns out that most of them had never been told by the developers that they were going to have to pay this landscape improvement maintenance district fee. Now, the good news was that they didn't know about this for a long time. They didn't know this for a long time because the bad news was Maricopa County didn't send out the bills for about 4 years.
Oh, I see.
So people who've been driving by grousing about the fact that they had dying trees and broken bushes and bald patches in the grass, and wondering why did someone take care of this, suddenly get 4 years, I'm not kidding you, 4 years worth of maintenance fees.
What were the maintenance fees typically? How much were they?
Well, some of these was thousands of dollars.
Wow.
There were some people that got bills for like $8,000 and $10,000 with a note from Maricopa County saying this is a lien against your property. And I'll tell you what, in 10 years on the city council, I have never seen a more angry group of people.
Well, I can imagine.
Well, you bet. I mean, these people, they had no idea. First of all, they were mad about the bad maintenance to begin with. They were mad that the home builders didn't tell them they're going to have to pay for it. Then they get bills, and again, some were $8,000 and $10,000 that they're told you pay this $8,000 or $10,000 bill, or it's going to be a lien on your property. And so, like I said, everything that could go wrong did go wrong, and at that point, the town decided this doesn't work well for us, and so we still have, I think, 8 or 10 of these in town, and we decided after this, it'll be the responsibility of each neighborhood, the developer, if they're going to build there with common areas, to set up a homeowners association and then turn it over to the people. Now, the problem with homeowners associations is that just like people don't vote in regular elections, they really don't vote in homeowners association elections. And invariably, it's not uncommon to get somebody that's just an absolute jerk president of the association. And for a lot of these people, it's the first time in their life they've had anything look like power or authority or influence.
Yeah.
And so, and they don't have, like you said, they've got powers that I don't have as mayor.
Yeah.
And they abuse them, or they terrorize people, and that's the problem. And it's, there's solutions, one of which is we probably, and I need, I got my town attorneys looking at this, we probably need to have kind of a uniform set of deed restrictions that all homeowner associations run under, but they really do get, just as in the case, as the one that you first contacted me over with Miss Evelyn Lyles, where they just get, they're totally out of control with nothing, not even their conscience to control their actions.
We're going to come back and we're going to talk about that. We're talking to the Honorable Steve Berman, who's mayor of Gilbert, Arizona, and we're on the Commons. I want to go back and explore the Landscape Maintenance Improvement District that you were talking about, Steve, if we can. Do you think, if the county, or maybe even if the city, or is it a town? Gilbert's a town, right?
Yes.
If the town of Gilbert had been more diligent in collecting this, do you think that that would have been a feasible, a workable solution?
Yes. Yeah. If it had been handled correctly, it would. It made all the sense in the world. But it was, like I said, it was mishandled. Every level was mishandled, including Maricopa County, which is a separate government agency, messed up and didn't send the bills out for years. And what ended up happening, of course, is when people came down, they wanted to lynch the council. That the town ended up absorbing about $1 million. And again, we absorbed over $1 million with these fees back at the time when Gilbert was so small that we actually had to close our town library down one day a week to save $20,000 for the year.
Wow.
And so back in those days, $20,000 was a lot of money, and this thing was $1 million hit. It was just crippling. And so there probably is ways to make the improvement district policy work again, but everybody has such a foul taste in their mouth about it that I don't know that how much support they'd be ever instituted again.
Have you had in Gilbert any incidents where associations were not maintaining the common areas?
Not that I'm aware of.
Because that is also a common problem where the money sort of disappears, whether it's management or the treasurer or whoever, somehow the assessments that are collected do not go towards maintaining the common areas. And I know that there have been incidents in a number of other states and other local jurisdictions where they've had to go in and do something. I mean, the swimming pool is green slime and the tennis courts had grass growing through them and all of that. In fact, I've been contacted by city employees, not from Arizona, but from other states, wanting to know how to force the association to maintain the common areas because they're not being maintained according to the city's own standards.
Well,
I said, maintain them yourself if they're not being maintained according to your standards.
I hear about them all the time, just rampant abuses. We've got a subdivision in Gilbert that was initially an artificial water ski park, and when the developer turned the park over to the homeowners association 5 years ago, they apparently they made an artificial lake that was made for it, and the homeowners association decided they wanted to for one thing, they wanted to go in there and build docks so they could put their boats out there.
Uh-huh.
And so they went, and in Arizona, water is a very precious commodity.
Oh yeah.
And so they made a deal with the local water company that they were able to pump the water out of the lake into the canal. They were going to get credit for the water, which is a good thing, because they were going to have to put water back in later. Well, some of the HOA screwed up and didn't tell the water company when they were going to do it. and they pumped about $50,000 of the water out of the lake into the canals and didn't tell anybody.
Uh-oh.
And then they sent the water company the bill for the $50,000, and they said, wait a second, how do we don't know what you put in there. We have to meter it. And they said, well, we metered it for you. And they said, well, yeah, thanks, but if we're paying for it, we're metering it. So there was $50,000 worth of a mistake that, again, an HOA. Again, the trouble with so many people in HOAs is they're people who've just never had any responsibility authority. And, I mean, now they're mad about the $50,000. They went into, when they put in the docks, the base of this lake was made out of bitumen and it was sealed, and they came with tractors to put in the docks, and of course tore up the seal and the membrane, and now, you know, they think they can get the developer to pay for that. Well, the developer was out of there 5 years ago, and the developer didn't have tractors, and they did.
And the developer's gone, huh?
Well, developer, why should he pay for it? It's not his fault. It wasn't tore up when he sold it to them. They're the ones that came in and drained the lake and threw the water away, and they got up there and destroyed the membrane. But again, it was the people involved, and so right now those members of that homeowner association are threatening to sue the developer, and he's saying, you know, I've done nothing wrong. I mean, bring it on. If you're going to sue me, go ahead. But in the meantime, what you've got is, in my opinion, the directors of the homeowner association are trying to cover their butts. And so they're creating more of a cost by suing a developer. And the developer can prove that the water heated, you know, the replacement water came in 5 years after he was no longer part of it. So he's got no liability on that $50,000.
And so the homeowners are going to end up paying for it.
They're going to pay for, they're going to pay for literally everything, including the legal fees. And so it's
affordable housing, hey, Steve?
Well, what's a shame is, as much as people demand self-governance, I mean, some people really do, you know, create, make a strong case for a monarchy, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know it.
Because they really, I get people call me complaining about their homeowner associations, and I tell them, you know, God love you, but you elected those people. You can unelect them. It's your association. If there's a make the changes you need to make.
That sounds so much easier than it's done, because quite often it's the board members who control the election. And I have heard stories of candidates who were never allowed to become candidates, voters who were disqualified simply because they knew how they were going to vote, and they sort of were sent letters of violation notices, which disqualified them. You know, the elections are manipulated a lot. So it's easy to say, hey, vote them out. And that seems to be the only real remedy that anybody can offer in these situations. But it's not that easy. It's really, really not that easy. You have to know what you're doing. You have to be willing to go the distance. You have to be willing to do all kinds of things. It's not like coming to your friendly, fun mayor and saying, hey, can you help out here? Those are not nice people, generally speaking.
It sure should be, but it's...
It should be, I know. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be having more with Steve, so don't go away.
Okay.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR Fairfax, Virginia. You're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me is probably one of the most fun people I've talked to in a long time. The Honorable Steve Berman, who's the mayor of Gilbert, Arizona. Steve, thank you so much. I know you're at work right now, and I know that you're taking time off to talk to us and educating us and explaining things to us that we needed to know. You, when we were off the air, we were talking a little bit. You have been a board member. You used to live in an association, you said, and you were president. So you know how hard it can be on both sides.
Yes, it sure can be.
So it's kind of a, I don't know, it just, because I was on the board as well, and I know that I used to take a lot of abuse from a lot of my neighbors, and they all thought that I was there to do their bidding for them. It seems to turn people into helpless victims all of a sudden. You know, my neighbor looked at me wrongly, or they're parked. I used to get calls at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. My neighbor's parked in my parking spot. Well, go knock on the door. Tell them to move. Don't call me. I want to go back. You mentioned Evelyn Lyles a while ago.
Yes.
Evelyn is, what, a single mother?
Yes, she's a single mother. She's a beautiful lady. She's got three children, ages 11, 15, and 18, and she was diagnosed with terminal breast cancer. And her home was, so she got behind in her homeowner association dues, which wasn't a big problem, but they started tacking legal fees on top of them. And before I know it, they were literally trying to evict her from her home, based mostly on the attorney's fees were tacked onto the delinquent HOA dues.
And they did actually foreclose, didn't they? Or?
No, they attempted, but the attorney that they hired, you talk about egregious, this guy's name was Guy Wolf. We used to call him Guy Weasel. I called old Wolf and I said, look, I'm the mayor. How much money does she owe? I can raise the money to pay it off. He wouldn't tell me.
Yeah, it's changed. You know, it's very liquid, the amount that's owed.
He wouldn't give us a straight answer.
Yeah.
We had one of the most prominent attorneys in Arizona. I called him, and the guy's name is David Udall. The Udall name is legendary in Arizona. It's just an office of the law. And Mr. Udall said, well, he'll tell me. Yeah, we wouldn't tell him either. And so we've got this incredible situation where we're trying to keep a lady in her home, and the attorney won't tell us how much money we have to pay to do it. And somehow another attorney was able to get the information out of this clown, and we were able to pay it off. The thing that was remarkable was this guy was so sloppy. In fact, one thing that was weird is his law office was a post office box. But his law practice was so sloppy that he actually sued the lady and got the judgment in the name of the wrong homeowners association.
Yeah, I remember that, actually.
And so if the lady had been well, in fact, it was too bad because the newspapers used the name that he had the judgment under, so people were, in Arizona, were furious that this place called Western Skies Homeowners Association was throwing a poor sick lady out in the street. It wasn't their homeowners association. They're going on, and it was funny because one of the people from that association thought her HO was doing this, and she came down to the mayor's office crying and wrote a check for $1,000 to help Miss Lyles out with their problems. And then other people in Arizona started calling people they knew that lived in this HOA and just abusing them over the phone, threatening them and asking what kind of scum they were. And so this HOA was just livid. And the one who did it was called Western Skies Homeowners Association Estates 2. They were pretty much off the hook. But
what a mess.
When I saw the judgment, I thought, yes. So what I wanted to do, or thought about doing, was go on to the homeowners association that had the judgment in their favor, who, of course, no money was owed to them, and try to get them to give me a satisfaction of judgment, which I would have taken down the court and say, okay, here's the judgment, here's a satisfaction judgment. Mr. Weasel can go pound sand. The trouble is Miss Lyles was dying and really was trying to stay alive and take care of her kids, and so anything that was going to protract the legal aspects of this really wasn't wasn't worth it. But if she had to been sick, if she had to been, you know, like I said, terminal breast cancer, we had a lot more fun with Mr. Wolf.
But you actually raised the money, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We paid it off. We paid for 3 years' worth of homeowners association dues for her.
In advance?
I'm sorry?
In advance you paid?
Yes, in advance, yeah.
Okay, so she's paid up current and up ahead.
Yes.
You're a remarkable man, Steve.
Well, I made her a deal. I told her I'd do it on the condition she agreed to work on my re-election campaign in the year 2009.
And she agreed.
Yes, she did.
I'll work on your campaign, campaign re-election.
2009, and that's because she has to stay alive until 2009 to pay that debt.
How's she doing?
She told me yesterday that she stabilized.
Good.
But it just, since she's so positive, and she tries so hard, and she's got her kids, I know she wants to, obviously she at least wants to see the 11-year-old up and gone. But she has, cancer's gotten into her skeleton. So it's serious stuff. I mean, it's deadly serious stuff.
Yeah.
And then I told her she had to hang with it to 2009 to pay her debt. She smiled and said, I'm going to do it, Mayor. I'll get you there. So yeah, she's someone you have to talk to. I mean, she is just so positive. I'll tell you what, I don't know if I was dying and knew I was dying, had three little kids at home and no one to help me, I don't know that I could stay as positive as she is. And she is just remarkably positive. I mean, she is absolutely an inspiration to me.
Well, unfortunately, she's not the only person who's being foreclosed on. I mean, the stories just keep coming. There was one out of Florida this morning where they foreclosed on to collect $63.
Well, they've actually thrown people out of homes in Arizona. It was strictly over. Started out with an assessment. It wasn't even the dues. It was someone didn't do something, and so they assessed them. And
a fine, you mean?
Yeah, it's our House Majority Leader Eddie Farnsworth is. In fact, I testified this week is trying to pass some legislation to at least delay that. It's remarkable. It's remarkable how the legislature, you know, I'm a mayor. I've got six guys on the council. I sometimes feel like it's, you know, Steve Berman, the six dwarfs, you know. I mean, why won't they do what I want? But tell you what, that's nothing compared to the legislature. My guys are smart. My guys are sensitive. My guys know what they're doing. And I only need to get three people to go along with me to pass whatever I need passed. But the legislature, there's 90 people down there.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable how self-serving some of the members of the Arizona State Legislature are, and how they're absolutely beholden to the lobbyists. And I never understood how a lobbyist, why would they care what a lobbyist likes or doesn't like, you know? What they care about is when the lobbyist comes up and says, you know, Mr. Martin, you are interested in running for the United States Congress. It's going to take at least $100,000 to do it. I can help you raise that money.
Mm-hmm.
But not if you go being a bad boy now.
So they're threatening them, basically.
Well, it's not threatening. It's just, you know, sure, if you're my friend, I can raise lots of money for re-election. And if you're not, I can raise money for people who are my friends. And if the matter is not personally related to you, if you don't really care about it much one way or the other, and someone's going to be your friend and help you, it's tempting, and that's what I've seen down at the legislature with some of these people. In fact, it shocked me when some of my friends explained that's how the... I mean, you always hear that, but I was down there this week, and that's why I really clearly understood exactly what the drill was. That the lobbyists basically offered to pay for elections for people, because most of these guys, you only make $25,000 a year as a legislator in the state of Arizona. And so you don't even make enough money if you took your entire legislator salary to pay for an election.
Yeah.
You could all do it. And so the money has to come from someplace, and it comes oftentimes from lobbyists who can only give so much money, but they have friends that will raise the money. And apparently the association lobby is so strong that they're greasing a lot of skids.
Are you a full-time mayor? No, you're not.
Well, not, well, it's full-time hours, just not full-time pay.
Okay.
So I own... two retail stores, and I own a third interest in a real estate company.
Okay, so you basically have to do, because I know in Virginia they're not full-time legislators. I have no idea what they make here, but probably a heck of a lot more than $25,000.
Don't bet on it. people hate paying government officials. There's this theory that if you want to serve so bad, you should do it for free. And, I mean, it really is. It's just remarkable. There are people in my city that believe that the mayor and council should not be paid. We should simply work for the privilege of being able to be the leaders. And, of course, you can sure carry that argument to all sorts of positions. You know, if you like being a cop so bad, work for free. And if you like being a fireman so bad, work for free. You know, well, that's not it. It's just if you want competent people who have some talent, you need to somehow, they've got to be compensated for their time.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the problems we're having in associations. They work for free.
Yeah,
and we say, hey, hands off, guys. You know, they're volunteers. They can do whatever they want to do, and they can get away with whatever they want to get away with.
That's right.
Eddie Farnsworth, I've had Eddie on. Eddie was on the show, last year when he was trying to get his bill through. And there was a lot of dirty politics that went on, and his bill was killed. And it was shortly after that the Evelyn Lyle story broke.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
So are you still getting the same? I mean, you went to, there was a hearing, a committee hearing on his bill. On Thursday, and I understand that he defended his bill brilliantly. The special interests were there whining and complaining about, oh, these poor associations, if they can't collect their money, then, you know, they're all going to go defunct. Well, you know, that's debatable.
He's brilliant in general, though.
Is he really brilliant in general?
Eddie Farnsworth is absolutely one of the brightest people I've ever met in my entire life. Eddie is, I mean, brilliant probably doesn't cover it. The man, he is truly Eddie's brilliant. He's in a class of his own.
Well, I certainly liked him when I talked to him. But anyway, I understand that he kind of put people in their places, but that you were key to that testimony, because everybody was on hold until the mayor of Gilbert showed up and testified on behalf of, in favor of the bill, right?
Well, I certainly testified in favor. I don't know that I was a deciding factor for anybody.
Oh, let me tell you, Steve, I hear from a lot of your constituents, and, you know, they were writing to me shortly afterwards saying, you ought to know what the mayor of Gilbert did. And so I sit here on the other side for some strange reason, and I get all of these reports. So I know that your testimony went a long way in helping get it passed.
Well, I'm going to continue to do it until it gets taken care of, because I was president of a homeless association. I know that particularly in our homeless association, I didn't know we even had an HOA. You know, we had one. We didn't have any common areas. The developer just had it. We lived on one-acre home sites, and I don't think we even had dues. I mean, they might have been $20 a year or something like that. They really weren't very, very, very significant. But I do know that in particularly in the HOAs, so they have really lavish landscaping. A lot of them have got, you know, a million square feet of turf, you know, that needs to be watered and landscaped to maintain. That if you have a bunch of people that aren't paying their fair share, then other people have to pick up the load. But I do believe that if someone's not paying their dues, there's nothing wrong with putting an assessment of the property and finding them and charging them interest. Because sooner or later, the property is going to get sold. And at that point, the association gets its money.
Okay. Yeah, usually something like that is actually in the CC&Rs, and it says, you know, if you fail to pay, then it, you know, it runs with the land, and if you fail to pay, then we can place a lien on the property. And they usually have either the penalties, you know, late fees, late charges, interest, however it works. Some attorneys have told me that the only legitimate the fee that they can collect is an interest. Fines, two courts in the country have found fines to be unconstitutional by a homeowners association because it's a sovereign power that cannot be delegated, and this goes back to the balance of powers and, you know, all of that that we have in America. But, no, I agree with you. If you live in an association and you derive the benefits of the association, you have to pay for it. There's no question about it. It's the way they collect and the fact that there's so many mistakes that are made and the fact that any homeowner, I mean, you saw it yourself trying to figure out how much was owed by Evelyn. You know, they don't tell you.
No, I mean, you know, to issue, again, I'm a veteran. I was a captain in the Army, and my father, in fact, it's kind of funny, my family's been in about every war there was. I was in during the Vietnam conflict, and you know, one of the most fundamental rights that all Americans are entitled to is private property and the right to have their own home. And it's fundamentally wrong to take a person's home away from them for something like this. It just absolutely is fundamentally wrong.
I agree.
And I'm gonna whatever I can do to stop it, I will. And one of the things I said in my testimony was that if this didn't get passed, that Gilbert was one of the leaders in Gilbert's Gilbert's one of the communities in Arizona that's just a catalyst community, just across the board. Little among other things, this is a we get honored all the time. But literally 2 weeks ago, the Survey Association for the state of Arizona determined that Gilbert is the exact population center of the state of Arizona. That people in every direction of the state. Gilbert's a center. Last year, I mean, four of the last five Miss Arizonas came from Gilbert. I mean, Gilbert's is a
oh,
leader
really?
Community. We lead in everything. And I told them that we were the leader in bringing and requiring HOAs, and if their legislation isn't passed that restricts their power to a reasonable level, that I'm going to see what I can do about having where we no longer require HOAs.
All right.
We'll push it in the other direction and see how they like that, because this is, you can't do this to people. You can't have people in fear. I mean, my God, people are more afraid of their homeowners association than they're afraid of the city government.
You know, you're absolutely correct.
And I'll tell you something else that really frosts me is most people pay
Did I
higher
tell you
homeowners
folks
association
that this
dues than they pay property tax in the town of Gilbert.
I agree. When we moved here, our taxes in Arizona in Mesa were somewhere around $200 a month or a year. When we moved to Virginia, we got a smaller house. Our assessments were twice as much, and our taxes were four times as much, and the taxes never did get us anything. You know, it's just a black hole, and they keep growing. You just keep chucking the money in there, and you don't get anything. The city of Mesa did provide us with services. Not so in Virginia, though.
Well, the town of Gilbert, we've been around for about 85 years, and I've actually lowered the taxes twice in the 3 years I've been mayor, lowered the property taxes.
You've been mayor twice, you said?
Yeah, I was mayor between 1989 and 1991.
Okay.
And then I was elected again this time in 2001.
Do you have limits? Can you remain mayor? What's the deal?
No, there are no term limits in Gilbert. It's just real tough to get reelected, it seems like.
And whether you're willing to do it?
Yeah, I'm gonna give another shot.
Okay, but I mean, I guess that's the only qualification requirement is that you be willing to do it.
Yes, and I've been very fortunate. We do an approval survey in the town every year as to what do people think of their water service and their roads and their this and their that. And one of the questions is, do you agree with the decisions of the mayor? And last year, 8% of the people in the town said they did not agree with my decisions.
Eight.
And this year, 6.1% said they don't agree with my decisions. So.
Wow.
Hopefully I get reelected, but you know, you never can tell.
Did I, I sent out an announcement and I said that you were not the typical mayor.
I saw that.
You saw that? Okay.
Yeah.
Now guys, do you know why I said that? I mean, you know, wouldn't you like to have the Honorable Steve Berman as your mayor? I would. I certainly would. I think you're doing a bang up job, Steve, and I know that your constituents love you. I mean, I hear from them. So they write to me and I talk to them sometimes. And
well,
so they're very, very happy with you. So I can understand why your approval rating is so high. So you're willing to pull the plug on the HOA mandates if they don't come up with some reforms.
Well, something has to happen. We can't be doing this anymore. Now, again, it takes three votes. I've got to muscle three more guys to move in my direction. But, yeah, it's we have to do something different because this is just absolutely unacceptable. We can't throw people out for stuff like this.
There was a story out of California a couple of weeks ago, I think, where the house was sold for $1.50 in late fees, by the way. It was not, I mean, they did all the assessments. They sent them a bill for the amount that they owed. The people can carry the check to the association. The association sent it to the collection agent. The agent said, oops, we've just tacked on another $1.50 in late fees since we sent the bill, and so we are not going to accept this check. And they went ahead and foreclosed and sold a $400,000 house for $70,000.
Well, sounds like somebody is playing hardball, though.
$1.50.
I mean, it sounds like someone who's due the assessment should have saved his house for $1.50.
Well, they thought they'd paid it off. You see, that's the problem. They got a bill. They took a check. They wrote a check for the exact amount that was on the bill and delivered it to the association. The association accepted the check, sent the check off to the collection agent, who said, oops, since then we've added another $1.50 in late fees. Therefore, this is not enough. We refuse to accept the check, and they went ahead and foreclosed.
Well, I don't know if you know about this, but in Arizona, a couple of years ago, someone decided to solve his problems with HOA. He had all he was going to take, and he went in there to his house with a chainsaw and basically destroyed the inside of his house, and then he went down to the HOA meeting with a shotgun. Yeah, and killed some people.
Yeah. Well, you have someone who's in the hospital right now who allegedly shot himself over problems with his association, right?
I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, there's a gentleman in Mesa who's in the hospital. My understanding is out of sheer frustration, he shot himself. And this was not a subdivision that started off with an association, but one that was imposed on them after the fact. But, Steve, we're out of time. Can you believe that a whole hour has gone by?
You're so sweet, Sue. Thank you for letting me share this. And one thing I'll do is I will email you a copy of my last year's Christmas card that we sent out.
I'd love to get it.
Oh, it got posted in one of the local talk shows' website, and it always gets a lot to it. I'm a little eccentric, and when you see my card, you'll say, oh, my God, he sent this out.
Well, your email address is the Fun Mayor, right?
Yes.
And that's not a misnomer. That's absolutely correct. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you
for taking the time out to join us. I know you're at work right now. I appreciate all of your insights and all of your hard work and for being such a leader in the political arena. And I hope you'll come back sometime and talk to us again.
If you invite me, I'll be there.
Great.
Thanks, Sue.
Thanks to all of you also for joining us. And we'll be back, same time, same place. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.